Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Right, I'm a bit confused at this stage. It's been a relentless couple of days. Let me just check this out, if I got this straight. Robbie Keane has taken over as Irish rugby head coach with Mick McCarthy as his assistant. Andy Farrell will manage the Irish football team for a couple of years until he hands the reins to Joe Schmidt. Meanwhile, Mick McCarthy has announced that he will finish coaching following the Rugby World Cup in Japan next year.
Just about enough.
I've got the main players.
Yeah, you've got it pretty much right. I'd have some minor quibbles with parts of that one, but you've basically got the gist.
Welcome, everybody, to Monday's Second Captains Podcast. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Owen. How are you?
Hello, Kieran.
Hello,
everyone. Heard from you there. We've already brought you, indeed, your football podcast this Monday, Open to All. That features a ton of reaction to the Mick McCarthy-Stephen Kenny succession plan. In order to get that one out early, we decided to record it before Stephen Kenny's press conference this morning. So what we're going to do on this pod is bring you a flavour of that press conference, of what Kenny had to say about his appointment as under-21 manager come senior manager after Mick. We'll do that at the end of this show, play a few clips of Stephen Kenny. And on the World Service tomorrow, Richie Sadler will be in studio for a reflection on a crazy, crazy few days in the generally kind of crazy world of Irish international football. But first, the rugby situation. It seemed pretty obvious after the win against the USA on Saturday that Joe Schmidt's time was up with the Ireland team. So this has been rumbling on for a good while. He informed journalists that, yes, he had made his decision. He didn't reveal to them what the decision was, but he did say that the IRFU had asked him not to be rash. If you feel like changing your mind, let's keep talking. So I think unless the IRFU were gone a bit skew ways in their decision-making process, we understood that to mean that he was going to announce he was finishing up today. That was obvious enough. But what was fairly shocking was the wording of the statement that came in. Joe Schmidt has today announced that he will finish coaching following the Rugby World Cup in Japan next year. Andy Farrell will become Ireland's head coach after the tournament. Speaking about his decision to finish coaching, Joe Schmidt said, "I've decided to finish coaching and we'll prioritise family commitments after the Rugby World Cup in 2019. I feel that Irish rugby is in good hands, etc, etc, etc." So they really drummed home that point that he is finished coaching, which is, well, that's if you take that as gospel, then he's retiring from rugby coaching, which is spectacular news. That's the way to do it, Joe. Go in. Have two jobs as a number one with Leinster and Ireland and absolutely ace them both beyond anybody's wildest imaginations, and then just walk off into the sunset.
Yeah. Retired 54.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm not sure if he's going to be fully retired.
I doubt it.
I think he might be a bit burned out at this stage, Joe.
Yeah, I would say so. Maybe 2 years off. I mean,
what happens when he jet washes the jet washer? Mick McCarthy's phrase.
Yeah.
What was that phrase?
That was it. When did you know it was time to... When did you feel like you might like to take another job, Mick? When I jet washed the jet washer and packed it away, then I thought, it's time to go back to work.
Yeah.
What a turnaround this is for John Delaney, by the way, because it's only 1 week ago that we were sitting here using Joe Schmidt as a stick with which to beat John Delaney. Now, Joe Schmidt's retiring and John Delaney's just got managers lined up far into the future. I mean, that is an unbelievable 7 days in the history of the FAI.
What did John Delaney do to you, Ken?
Sorry?
So you're also giving Delaney some credit for Joe Schmidt?
No, I'm not giving him credit. I'm just saying it's like, you know, ding dong, the witch is dead, thinks John Delaney. Oh, we've been hearing all about this RFU. Oh, they're so well organized. Oh, they seem to, those guys just seem, never seem to make a mistake. They seem to do everything right. Well, let's see how this succession goes.
Well, they have installed an actual succession plan in that they've got the guy who's currently in the number two role moving seamlessly up to number one.
I wonder where they got that idea.
He is the second most highly rated coach in the world after Joe Schmidt.
All I'm saying is it's difficult to replace a guy like Joe Schmidt. And I'm sure John Delaney, like a lot of other Irish sports fans, looks forward to seeing how that goes for the RFU.
We've got three Six Nations titles under Joe Schmidt, including a Grand Slam. Historic wins over all these major Southern Hemisphere teams. Currently in the middle of a record 12 games unbeaten at home. And hopefully Schmidt will leave us with a bit more silverware in 2019 before he finishes coaching entirely. You'll hear from Gerry Thorney in a few minutes' time. But first, with us to reflect on this massive news is Shane Horgan. Hi, Shane.
How you doing?
The decision is not surprising in one way, in that it had been mooted he was going to step away from the Irish scene, but the statement reveals that he's stepping away from rugby altogether. Does this surprise you?
Yeah, both of them surprised me. A little bit, not quite shocked, but I did sort of knock me off balance a little bit this morning when I heard it. I think one, because I'm really disappointed that he's not staying on, because he's just left such an incredible mark on Irish rugby, Leinster rugby, actually me personally, and I think a lot of people fall into that category of Irish players. So it's a sad day. I know we've got him for a while longer and we could have some serious success in that time, but it is sad to lose him because he is an incredible force and has changed rugby in Ireland forever.
The most relevant quote was, "I've decided to finish coaching and will prioritise family commitments after the Rugby World Cup in 2019. That's a decision that he's come to after quite a bit of agonising, but that's surely changeable long term. I mean, somebody that obsessed with the game in the way that he is, he's been so involved. Would you think that this is the kind of thing that somebody says at a certain moment in their life, but maybe the door is open for them, hopefully to come back to Ireland, but to get back involved in rugby coaching?
Yeah, well, I don't think it means Joe Schmidt is finished with rugby coaching. However long his break is, that's to be decided, and I'd say it'll depend on opportunity. It'll depend on what's going on with his own family as well. And he and his family have made an amazing commitment to rugby over the last probably two decades almost. And Joe was over in Mullingar at one point, so he's travelled the world. He's from Mullingar to Claremont to Leinster to Ireland, and it takes there is a toll that rugby takes on you, especially professional rugby, and in the manner that he conducts himself and the detail that he goes into. So he's certainly due a rest. He deserves one. How long he'll be able to take one is entirely up to him. He'll always be a hugely in demand coach. But I suppose it comes down, a lot of it does come down to his family and how much time he needs to spend with them after the World Cup. And as I said, the opportunity, he'll be able to really pick and choose the job he wants if he does want one. So I can see him not coming back into rugby, but I think there will be a little bit of a lag period there.
Being purely selfish about it from an Irish point of view, then, is is this kind of not the worst outcome? As in, the worst outcome would have been Joe Schmidt walking away and walking straight into the New Zealand job or maybe another national team's job. What I'm saying, Shane, is if we can't have him, isn't it great that the rest of the world can't have him either?
It really is. That's fantastic. That's the one good thing we can pull out of today. I actually think there's a bit of truth in that. Not that he's not going to go on somewhere else and succeed somewhere else potentially, but I think it's always a little uncomfortable if you're coaching a side and you've named the opposition you're going to, potential opposition that you're going to. It can actually disintegrate the relationships and it can make things more difficult for the coach and for the players. So to know that we have him 100% focused on trying to achieve great things for Ireland in the next year with nothing hanging over and certainly no speculation that could be confirmed in that time focuses the mind brilliantly for a World Cup, which will be hopefully the pinnacle of what he's done during his time with Ireland.
Neil Francis wrote, Shane, that he thinks almost all of our success is down to Joe Schmidt and that things could fall apart when he leaves. It's impossible to quantify how much impact he's had and how we might do if he's gone or when he's gone. But would you be concerned? Do you put it almost all down to Joe Schmidt, or is there so many variables at play that we can't even judge it?
No, I don't put it all down to Joe Smith. I think, and it would be naive to do that. It's hard to state how big his impact is, but you know, Ireland have been producing a lot of talented players for a long time now. And if you look at the players that have come into Joe Smith's squad in the last 18 months even, you'll see that conveyor belt is there, and that will continue after Joe was finished. I'm certain of that. Now, we don't want to be complacent, but the structures in place are pretty strong for the developing talent. They could be stronger, they could be broader, but that has aided Joe in a huge way, as has this cohort of players. I think Joe gets the best out of them, but he's also had some of the best that we've seen maybe ever for Ireland. And, in particular, around the 9 and 10, this generation has been incredibly strong. And that's a very good foundation to establish, success in. But, certainly not the only reason for success. And I think his coaching has been, phenomenal. His focus on the detail will inform a whole group of coaches, Irish coaches now, and hopefully ensure that there's not a huge fall off when he does go.
No, and certainly continuity is what the IRFU were preaching in their statement. Andy Farrell slots in fairly seamlessly there. He'll be in charge for the next World Cup cycle, as they call these four-year periods in rugby. You weren't a massive fan of the appointment of Andy Farrell when he first came to Irish rugby, Shane. Has he done enough to convince you that he's now Irish head coach material?
I suppose from a defensive perspective, he's the leading in the world, and that's commonly acknowledged by many. He's a very sought after coach, and his systems, I think, have gotten better. In particular, this year, I was always a little bit concerned that his defensive system in the 22 meant that we were a little bit exposed sometimes. We didn't always get our numbering up right, but I think that may have been individual errors as opposed to his overall plan. But Ireland are very comfortable in the last couple of weeks have really proved that the defensive structure is A1. It's a big job, and it's a big change in job to take on the head coaching role. And Joe has serious input into how the backs play and identifying the overall structure and weaknesses in the opposition, and creating a game plan, as we all know, to expose those. That's an intellectual endeavor that I'm not saying it's Joe Schmidt is the only one to do it, but I don't know if I've seen anybody else better at doing it. So we will fall off a little bit in that area, I think, but he's been an apprentice for a number of years now and will have learned a lot. So the Andy Farrell who took up this role for Ireland, I would think, is a completely different man and different coach than he is at the moment.
Shane, brilliant stuff. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Emil.
Jerry Thorney has been listening to Shane there. Mm. Jerry, how are you?
Good, thank you.
We might start at the end of that bit with Shane there, talking about Andy Farrell and the fall off, I guess, in attacking nous, as well as everything else that we lose when Joe Schmidt leaves. Now, there are a lot of rumours that maybe Stuart Lancaster at some point will come into the setup and maybe make up some of that shortfall. I don't know if that's going to happen or how you see this all panning out with Andy Farrell. It's early days. I guess he's only just been appointed, but he has got the other coaches with him, I think, for another year anyway, the rest of that backroom team. So that's where the continuity comes in.
Yeah, I think Andy Farrell is the perfect appointment.
Do you? Yeah,
yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. I do. I do. I think a continuity from within, as proven the All Blacks model has worked very successfully. You think of Graham Henry signing off for the 2011 World Cup as head coach of the All Blacks. I think I'm right in saying that Steve Hansen had already been nominated as a successor by then, as one of assistants, and he's gone on and won the World Cup subsequently. I think that he's ready for a head coach job. He served 3 years, more than 3 years now, I think, under Joe Schmidt. He came in after the 2016 Six Nations. His record speaks for itself. Yeah, sure, there have been occasional blemishes, but the last two times the All Blacks have been kept tryless. And the first time by one of the four home unions since 1995, both times he's been the defence coach. Mm. And I think also that Stuart Lancaster would be a perfect fit. And the very fact that he's working in Ireland as well, he's helped transform Leinster. He's worked with a lot of these backs coaches, Leinster backs at Leinster, Sexton, Ringrose, et al. He's also very good at identifying young talent and improving it, such as Jordan Larmer. And he's a proven attack coach. So in many respects, he's the best fit in terms of working within the system who can fill that huge void left by Joe Schmidt. So, and also himself and Andy Farrell have worked together before. It might mean a slight change in role with Andy Farrell now being the head man. But you know what? I'd safely say Stuart Lancaster might prefer that because he's spoken since he's come to Leinster of being much more happy to be back in the training pitch and working with players. He's kind of 90% coaching and 10% peripheral off-the-pitch stuff. Whereas when he was England head coach, it was the other way around. It was 90% off the field and dealing with the media, whatever else, and very little hands-on coaching, which is, and he's proven record of developing young players. And possibly, you've got to remember the huge role Leinster played in all of this. 2010, they brought in Joe Who, you know, Arsène Who. It was Joe Schmidt. He was a number two coach all the time at Clare. Not many people had heard of him. I think Leinster got the idea from an interview with Issa Naseba. When I asked Issa who was the biggest influence on his career, and he said, Mr. Rugby at Auckland Blues. I said, who's that? Joe Schmidt. I said, Joe Who? Mm. You know, and I think that might have been what got the idea going in Mick Dawson's mind. So they brought in him. They brought in Stuart Lancaster, and maybe they've got a succession plan in stakes. That's why they brought in Felipe Contepomi.
Okay, all right. There's a lot to digest there.
On his personality, Farrell.
Yep.
Really likable and charismatic and larger than life.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very different to Joe.
Mm-hmm.
More relaxed, puts more of himself out there, I suppose. But, you know, in terms of those, I always think with Joe, the standards he maintains, you need that kind of obsessive personality.
Mm.
How big a factor is the obsessiveness in Joe's success in just nipping at every little flaw that the players or the systems have?
It's extraordinary, really. I don't know. You couldn't possibly get another Joe Schmidt. There's a touch of the mad genius about him. You know what I mean? He'd be like this musician that calls in all his artists at about 5 a.m. I've got a new song for you. Yeah, now, I don't think he wakes up all the staff at 5 a.m, but I'd safely say he's first in, last out. And I mean, even reading Andrew Conway's quotes this morning about, you know, when he was just in the Leinster setup, he was getting regular texts and messages from Joe, just highlighting little aspects of his game that he needs to improve, whatever. You'd see him at Schools Cup matches. I remember years out from the last World Cup, he said, give me a tip off. Who's an uncapped player that might feature at the World Cup? And he said, Tadhg Furlong. He's always watching players from years in advance, developing, bringing them in to, you know, senior sessions with the Irish team, be it the under-20s or whatever. I don't know that you could get a mad genius, if you for want of a better word, than Joe. He's just so devoted to his job, and I think that's partly why he's taking a break as well. He's been coaching now full time for 15 years.
Yeah, and a bit like Pep Guardiola. I'm
thinking of Pep all morning.
They're aware of their own obsessiveness. They try and fight it. They need breaks. They burn themselves out
completely. And he even said afterwards, in separate from the press conference, when he's a little bit more relaxed sometimes with the daily huddle afterwards, you know, the Monday morning papers, he said, look, it's probably one of my biggest flaws, I'm a workaholic. I can't prevent myself, and I probably drive some of the staff mad. And I'd say when some of the staff read that comment, there would have been a few knowing smiles. He is very obsessive about his job. But to go back to Farrell, he won't be like-for-like replacement, but I don't think there is a like-like replacement.
Yeah.
I think Farrell as the personality driving it, with Stuart Lancaster coming in on board, it could be the best available ticket. I'm convinced it is the best available ticket.
Jerry, I was smiling when you brought that up first because, yes, they did work together before and it ended disastrously for them. They were among the most pilloried coaching team in recent memory in English rugby, although there have been one or two of those, and the current coach maybe is getting a little bit pilloried too. Mm. So maybe we shouldn't be harping too much back to English media reaction to sporting failures. That could be a dangerous road to go down. They did, though.
Home World Cup, though.
They did have a home World Cup. They did flame out in the group stage. It was a nightmare. That's the coaching. That was the coaching ticket. It might be reversed. Andy Farrell will be the head coach this time, and maybe Lancaster is more comfortable. But would you not have any concerns that the last time they worked together at international level, it did not finish well?
Moderately, but I think the pluses far outweigh the minuses, and I'll tell you why. When they first came in, England were a mess after the Martin Johnson era, after the previous 2011 World Cup. Remember Manu Tuilagi in Auckland Harbour, Manu overboard, and all the off-the-pitch stuff that went with their lamentable failure when beaten by France in the quarters. and just an unhappy camp. And the way Lancaster transformed them, brought in loads of new young players. I mean, much of the squad that Eddie Jones went off on an 18-match winning run were capped by Stuart Lancaster. They got the World Cup wrong. They got a midfield selection wrong with Sam Burgess. But you've got to remember as well that had Chris Robshaw told Owen Farrell to go for an equalising penalty against Wales in the end game of that game at Twickenham when I was at it, when they were unlucky not to beat Wales, frankly. They were the better team for an hour, but Wales typically, like a dog with a bone, then conjured a brilliant try, typically. But had they drawn that match, they would have qualified for the quarterfinals and history might have been a little bit different and we mightn't have Andy Farrell and Stuart Lancaster within Irish rugby, which would have been our loss and England's gain, I think, because you've got to remember as well, with the honourable exception of Joe Smith, virtually every coach gets sacked or has a failure somewhere along the way. Mm. Warren Gatland was sacked by Ireland, you know what I mean? Mm. Clive Woodward ended on a bad note with England. Graham Henry was let go by Wales. Steve Hansen was let go by Wales. The list, Michael Checker was let go by Stade Francais. The list is endless. Joe Schmidt is the exception to the rule in every sense. But I think that definitely Lancaster and Farrell will have learnt from their time. You're better for having that experience. They're better coaches now than they would have been then.
Does Joe Schmidt, his imminent departure, Shane said it's good that it's not a case, essentially what we're saying here is that it could have been New Zealand and that would have had to have been announced long in advance of it actually happening, I would have thought. In which case, that's hanging over the build up to the World Cup, which is a bit of a weird situation. That's not there now, but what is there is the knowledge that Joe Schmidt is finished, the era is over. Is there a danger that we sort of overreach a little bit, that this adds to the anxiety? This is these players' last tournament with Joe Schmidt, possibly the greatest coach in world rugby at the moment, that paradoxically that could actually add to the pressure. This is our last chance.
We were discussing this last week on the show, Jerry, and a bit like the 2007 World Cup group, where we saw them, and I think maybe they saw themselves as the first, but also maybe the last super talented group of players. And so it was all or nothing. This was the one in which we would do it or make an impact finally on the semi-finals. And in the same way, this is the Joe Schmidt shot at it, that it might never be as good again as this extra layer of pressure.
No, I just don't think so at all, to be honest, because every time this squad, these group of leaders of players and this coaching staff have been presented with a new challenge, they've just risen to it. You know, it's, we keep thinking, have they peaked, and they keep on reproducing. They follow a Grand Slam with the come from behind series win in Australia. They follow that with a clean sweep in November, rise to number two in the world, beat the All Blacks for the first time ever on Irish soil. So I don't see any evidence of that happening. If you remember back in 2007 as well, the head coach was given a 4-year extension about a month out from the World Cup. So it wasn't like the coach was leaving at the end of that tournament. Mm. Most of those Irish players, if memory serves, were in their mid to late 20s. Yeah, they were at their peak, but you know, they would still have the time to achieve more afterwards. And the core of that team would go on and win the Grand Slam in 2009. I just don't see, I don't think Joe Schmidt would ever allow standards to dip. I don't think Johnny Sexton would. I don't think Peter Manny would. Rory Best, any of the team leaders. So I don't think that really is an issue. And as I said before with Graham Henry, there is plenty of precedent of a coach seeing out his time with the World Cup final win. Jake White was supposedly a lame duck head coach with the South Africans in 2007, wasn't it? And his tenure was coming to an end. Everybody knew straight after the World Cup. They won the World Cup. So on balance, no, I wouldn't have a great concern about that.
If he does do this, say we go far in the World Cup and he does leave and quits rugby, it'll be one of the most remarkable sports stories this country's ever known, for him to come in, have this success, and then just leave the sport altogether. He'll be the most well-regarded rugby coach in the world, one of the most well-regarded ever, if we say make a semi-final, and then to just leave, like a Barry John style, just disappear from society.
And that is what we're saying at the moment, because I know we're maybe muddying the waters by saying that a few months or a few years down the line he'll change his mind, but literally the first line of the statement is Joe Schmidt has today announced that he will finish coaching following the Rugby World Cup in Japan next year.
Quite stark words. That was the one thing that threw me today. I wrote last week that I wouldn't be surprised if he took a break from coaching. I just had that feeling. It was because if you think, I remember even interviewing him last February. Remember, I got a rare one-on-one interview with him. And he said, "Look, myself and Kelly are definitely going to go back to New Zealand at some stage." He talked about their parents getting quite elderly, how he'd lost his father 10 years ago. He passed away. His mum is still there. So, and all through this month, he kept saying family reasons. He never said this was a rugby decision. Family reasons. Plus the intensity of the man and how much he's devoted to this job, how obsessive he is, that he probably just needs a break as well from coaching. It is, as you said earlier, very like Pep Guardiola. He is his own man. He's unique. He's a one-off. He's Joe Schmidt. There'll never be another. And it would be entirely in keeping with that he would find his own way of leaving, different from everybody else's. And I think also that's why I never thought he was going to be the next in line to succeed Steve Hansen as the All Blacks. You couldn't have a scenario where Ireland were playing New Zealand in the quarterfinals, or better still, the final of a World Cup, and Joe Schmidt was already in situ as the next All Blacks coach. It's also not the way that New Zealand Rugby Union tend to do business. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's his own. It's quite unique. He could do very well in the World Cup, and it would be fitting if he did, that he had a nice fitting end game to this remarkable achievement he has in Irish rugby. The mark he's left on, I mean, I was listening to Shane there, he left a mark on him. He's left a mark on all of us, even the journalists in the press box. He's just, he's so intense, so different. His press conferences are compelling. You just listen to every word, you transcribe every word, and you keep them because you know they're just worth referring back to at some point.
Yeah.
He's a one off, but
the amount of schools and provinces and clubs he's gone to.
Yeah.
It's free of charge as well.
He gives a lot of speeches for free, a lot of work for charity, you know.
This is all referred to in the statement as well. It's notable that Philip Brown talked about, he thanked Joe for all that work he's done with various groups and charities and that kind of thing. And David Nusifora talked about it being broader than just the success of the national team, that he's had a positive influence on the entire structure of rugby in Ireland. Like, that's an amazing legacy above and beyond just the ridiculous results that he's had, that he's transformed this thing in the way he has.
Absolutely. And I think nobody else could have done it. He's absolutely maximised the potential of what's around him. And well, so far, hopefully there's better still to come. I do agree with Shane, though, in the sense that it's not entirely of his making. You know, we've got to keep a little bit of balance here in that. I remember when I was interviewing Warren Gatland for the Lions Diary book I did with him, and just rambling through one day, just chatting to him, and I said, what makes a great coach? And immediately the first thing he said is, great players. You know, you can't achieve without good players. And, you know, at the moment, Ireland have the best 9 and 10 in the world, probably. The best 3 in the world. You were saying to me last week, wrecking my head, Simon, that we have the best pack in the world. And I just can't get my head around all this scar tissue that we might have. So he does have great players to work with. The system is superb, particularly in Leinster. Yeah. It's producing this conveyor belt, as Shane said, this production line of players in several different positions. So that's also what gives you a little bit of hope for the future, beyond Joe. But definitely, he absolutely made the most of it. And he was essential to bringing a lot of that through as well.
But of course, he isn't responsible for all the success. But at the level Ireland are at now, which is this sort of, along with Wales and Australia and South Africa and not France anymore, but, you know, there's 4 or 5 teams there just below New Zealand that are all a very similar level.
Yeah.
But that Joe Schmidt and the coach really is what gives you that extra 2 or 3% that makes you win all these games, because they're all so close now. They're all within sort of 7 points.
Yeah, it's what Brian O'Driscoll called this. He's got a photographic memory of a rugby pitch. Joe said that Brian O'Driscoll was being way too kind to him, but he spots so much on a pitch. He's an uncanny knack for this game, as Andrew Conway said. And he's a bit of a genius in that. And as well as everything else, he's also a great selector. So many good coaches don't always pick the right
players. Because I've heard people say he isn't. You know, I've heard Luke Fitzgerald say it a few times.
Yeah, I disagree totally. I think he's a brilliant selector. The amount of times he's thrown out a selection and people have gone, oh, there's a couple of curveballs in there. Yeah. That won't work. And it always does.
Yeah.
And the other thing about him as well is, I think, I haven't been mentioned yet, the seamless way late replacements come into that team. You know what I mean? Whether it's Reece Ruddock on the morning of a match against South Africa for Chris Henry, whether it's Will Addison coming in at centre, having not been in the 22 for his first full start for Ireland. Because you have to serve your time in the system. You have to go around doing your homework. You have to understand all the plays. You've got to understand the first two in at the ruck won't be tied to you if you don't clear that ball out. And so many other ways in which he drives the standards of this. And everybody understands the system. So you're right. It always adds up to even more than the sum of the parts. And the parts are pretty bloody good at the moment. But with Joe there, they always add up to even more. And we've often spoken in this room about looking ahead to a match. And as with the All Blacks, we mentioned it, because it was a bit of a low-key win against Argentina, and he'd only gone out to Chicago on the Thursday of the Italian game, that basically they were keeping their powder dry for the New Zealand game. That was the one he'd really earmarked, along with the 12 other players who'd stayed back in the Carlton house. Because with every game that Ireland play, nearly, there is a Joe Schmidt factor. Mm. It's remarkable. I can't think of another coach that I stole the virtues of so much, but whenever I ask myself, are we overdoing this? I think of Brian O'Driscoll, Johnny Sexton, Conor Murray, Sean O'Brien, all these players I know who all say he's just the best coach they've ever worked with.
Yeah, it's a key thing because, well, players have to say nice things about coaches.
No, but this is
but they do, they really do. Like Andrew Conway is saying, oh, he's a ridiculous rugby coach. This is just at the weekend. You don't even know the half of it. It's incredible the standards he sets, drives everything. It sometimes players can get a bit pissed off when the coaches get all the credit. Like, I remember when Adam Lallana started playing a little bit better for Liverpool when Jurgen Klopp came in, And I saw him being interviewed about Jurgen Klopp. This happened a couple of times after big games, that he big performance he produced, and he was being asked, what has Klopp done to improve your game? And you can see there's gritted teeth, because he's thinking, I'm improving my own game here. Stop giving the coach all the credit.
Yes.
And yet I don't get that sense for most.
Even doubters like Paul O'Connell, I think initially, partly maybe jealousy and watching afar from Munster and hearing Leinster players bleed on about how amazing Schmidt was. And you know, when you hear too much of that, you almost like, prove yourself then. Yeah. You know, how great are you? And then within a few weeks, he's like, this guy's amazing. Yeah. I want to play like
Paul becomes a complete disciple, as big as any Leinster disciple.
It's like when you're told a movie is really, really good and it's massively hyped and you want to not like it, but then the movie turned out to be pretty
good. Another thing on that same theme. Yeah. I asked Rhys Ruddock last Friday at the press conference, you know, because Joe last February admitted to me he was agonising over this decision. Do the players need a fresh voice? Are they sick and tired of me? I particularly feel sorry for those poor Leinster players who've had me for 8.5 years, cajoling them, bullying them, you know, always at them. And I put this to Rhys Ruddock. Now, of course, he's obliged to answer in the affirmative, maybe, but he said, very interesting, and this is true. I remember Brian O'Driscoll saying the same of Joe. They never tire of his message. They never tire of his training sessions. They're always interesting. They always look forward to going to training, whether it was with Leinster or with Ireland. And Rhys said, definitely not. No way is any player becoming tired of his message. And he was one of those. He came in a year before Joe at Leinster, so he would have had Joe for all of these 8.5 years. And Rhys Ruddock mightn't always, you know, have won favour in terms of selection. He's captain of the second team, in effect, who comes in. And he had a fine game on Saturday in that regard, and he's 6 from 6 as captain. But he said, no, under no circumstances are the players tiring of his message. And you know, that is a remarkable thing as well, to maintain a certain freshness after 9 years coaching the same players.
But imagine somebody came into your life, Jerry, and said, here's how to write 2,000 words in half an hour.
Jeez, I wish they would.
Solve all your journalistic problems.
Not a word out of place. And if there is, it'll be hell to pay. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Bring him in.
Obviously, Joe's eye would have been a little bit off the ball last night with regards to...
Well, Joe Schmidt would probably do that, actually.
Yeah, maybe that's his next gig. Joe Schmidt mightn't have had all his focus on the awards last night, the World Awards. Mm. He was given the best coach, Ireland won best team, but most importantly, Johnny Sexton won best player. And I know the line is that this isn't, you know, it's a team game and all this kind of stuff, but this isn't just a man of the match award. This is a really prestigious honour, which everybody felt a bit aggrieved that Brian O'Driscoll didn't win in 2009. So nice to see Johnny get his just his answer.
Wonderful to see. In the Irish Times last Saturday, we did a full page, why Johnny Sexton should be World Player of the Year. Then I saw the Indo done the same thing, and then I saw the Sunday Times do the same thing yesterday. It is a very prestigious award. It's held in very high esteem by the players. It's the World Rugby Players of the Year award. You're initially nominated by your peers, by the International Rugby Players Association, and then... tens of thousands of people in the public ratify this and voting on social media, but ultimately it comes down to a fairly distinguished panel of 8 people. And it ended, was it a 6-year hold by the All Blacks on this, and Beauden Barrett going for 3 in a row. He's the first Irish player since Keith Wood won the inaugural award, was in 2001, and it's deserved when you think about the year Ireland have had. And I know it's not part of the voting remit, but also that double for Leinster. 22 matches, only 2 defeats. One of them when he was rested from the starting team, but for which Ireland might now be on a run of 19 wins in a row, world record. You wouldn't put it past Johnny. And that double with Leinster. I think that Beauden Barrett, is an outstanding, fabulous rugby player. And he scored 4 tries in 1 game at Eden Park, was it, against Australia, which was just ridiculous. And I don't know that Johnny or any out half in the world could do that. Beauden Barrett has scored more tries in out half now than any other player in Test rugby, I think. Well, a few of them would have been from fullback, but you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
Johnny has been the most influential player of the year, and that's why he deserves it, because he was so influential in the Grand Slam. Need we just say more than that drop goal? You know, that alone, and then everything that backed up that achievement with Ireland and Leinster all the way through to guiding, steering the ship home against Argentina and New Zealand in November. I think he's a player at 33 now who's at the peak of his powers. There's nothing he can't do in a rugby pitch. He's got physically stronger again in latter years. He made 11 tackles out of 11 against the All Blacks. He's become a world-class goal kicker. His tactical kicking's on the money. He's got that golfer swinging action for a pass. He brings other players into the game. He's a brilliant, brilliant decision maker. I remember in the European Cup final against Racing, some people thought he didn't have a good game, but it was interesting that Gordon Darcy raved about his performance on the Wednesday, that he just kept plugging and plugging, and eventually Henshaw and Ringrose started to make some inroads, and it led to the 2 penalties by Nisei at the end. I mean, you know, that's another thought. Where will we be after Johnny goes? Because right now, he's the best out half probably in the world. He's certainly the best out half in Europe, and he's rightly the World Player of the Year.
Quick word on Andrew Conway. We've mentioned him a couple of times in passing. His performance obviously was exceptional at the weekend. Simon, I know you might want to throw this one at Jerry because you feel that maybe there's another position that could
aspects of his performance that made me think, why does he get so few games at fullback for Munster in Ireland?
Yeah, yeah.
Considering what I see it as the position where we maybe struggle with depth.
Yes, true, particularly with Simon Ziba.
More than on the wing, yeah.
Yeah, particularly now with Simon. The back three is a little, the cupboard's a little barer now, isn't it, than it used to be. You know, I know Tommy Bowe and Andrew Trimble haven't been in the team for a while, but they retired over the summer. Simon Ziba moved on.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Andrew Conway, he gives Ireland and Munster a counter-attacking option that they don't always have when he's on the pitch. It was very interesting the way he really trailed and looked for work. He talked about it earlier in the week, getting more involved. He's electrically quick. He can beat players. His lines of running are good. As good as the three tries he scored were the two he set up, even though one was chalked off. Yeah,
that's what made me think about the full-back position.
Yeah, it looks, though, as if he's going to be a winner now because Mike Healy's been brought into Munster. And also, I think, well, if he was the main winner of the day, another big winner of the month was Will Addison. Three different positions in the last two tests, outside centre, fullback, and left wing. That kind of versatility is going to be invaluable come the World Cup. And you've got Jordan Larmour there as well. So it looks like Andrew Conway is going to be a winner from now on.
All right, Jerry, brilliant stuff. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Available for Murray. Moves it back down now towards CJ Stander. CJ Stander under pressure, but it's Ireland to have control of it. Midway between the French 22 and the 10-metre line. Sexton with the attempt to drop a goal. Both side the 22. Goes towards the post. It's gone towards the post. It's over. Ireland with the drop and goal. It's gone between the posts. Let drop. The ball is gone. The fellas are just literally on top of each other. Away to the left hand side. France have been absolutely destroyed with the final kick of the game. It's drop and goal. France have been robbed of victory. 82-83 minutes gone. After Stade de France, the place has gone mad. Ireland have snatched it from the jaws of defeat.
Incroyable. Quel match winner. Quel match winner.
Jonathan Sexton à la dernière seconde crucifie l'équipe de France. Que c'est dur. C'est terrible. Terrible. Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Well, that is the Irish rugby coaching situation dealt with quite comprehensively for today, I believe. Time now for a little more of the football. We may as well get one more use out of the audio bit. Go on. It's today's Irish managerial update 2018.
They don't want to give the amount of money.
I turned down the opportunity to manage South Korea.
I want loads of money.
Yeah. But I can say it's at least €100,000 in cash.
Although now that I think about it, disclaimer for legal reasons, I must say,
don't forget
future Irish manager will not be paid in cash. Yeah. Former Monaghan Mayor Hugh McIlvaney not involved in selection process. Maybe there is some life in that audio bed even now. Because until Stephen Kenny actually takes over at the end of the European campaign, I feel it's an ongoing dynamic
every
story.
Every result is really, in ways, a managerial update.
Yeah. So
you know, we'll see Stephen Kenny, 93% likely to take over in July 2020. Stephen Kenny, 73%.
What's his likelihood now, actually?
100%, barring, you know, extraordinary events.
Exactly.
Okay, so what is it? So 100% there is a percentage, minus the extraordinary events.
Yeah, there's got to be a percentage chance that an extraordinary event could happen, even
if
it's 1%.
I'd say he's 91% likely to take over as the next Ireland football manager in the year 2020.
Why?
Because there's literally a million things that could happen between now and then that would make it less likely that Stephen Kenny takes over in 2020.
No, you John Delaney explained what was going to happen. He told us what was going to happen.
That's the plan.
Yeah, the plan.
Plans change.
Yeah. There was a great plan to sell a lot of tickets to the Aviva Stadium, as well as I recall. Didn't go quite so well.
Were you as impressed?
It was Nostra Delanius didn't get that one quite spot on, did he?
Mick Picard? Nostra Delanius.
Sorry, I don't know. Oh, I'm just riffing here. Sorry.
No, that's good. Mick McCarthy's very presence at yesterday's press conference has guilted Ken into believing that, of course, he was a logical choice for the job, even though you had slammed the idea last week. Were you as impressed as Stephen Kenny gave his insights to a media conference this afternoon?
Yes, I was impressed with Stephen Kenny.
Always comes across as a nice fella, does he? We've got two nice guys in charge.
Yeah, he was clearly delighted to have got this opportunity. I mean, the question came up, you know, like, wouldn't you rather be the senior manager? And he's like, this is the position I was offered. on that issue, the issue that you've been raising there, mm-hmm. How guaranteed is this succession? Just how gold-plated is this whole situation?
Yeah.
Are you concerned that Mick might decide, I'm staying on?
It's already been decided. Decisions have already been made. You know, I think if Mick gets Ireland to the Euros and performs well, I'll be absolutely delighted. It's a great scenario to have because you're taking over a team, playing with confidence. It's great for Mick because it'd be a massive achievement for him and to do that again. And, you know, his stock will be absolutely really high and it'd be great for him and great for the country. And, you know, I view that as a real... That's only good news, you know. That would only be good news.
Is that part of your contract or is it just you've been promised, essentially, that you'll be taken over in 2020?
Oh, yeah, it's in August 2020, yeah, I'm taking over. And that's been decided.
But not in writing as such?
No, it's in writing, yeah.
It's in writing.
What happened there at the end?
Okay, you know, like you have a sat nav and it says, like, in 100 meters, turn right.
Yeah.
Well, basically, as that exchange finished with Stephen Kenny saying, no, in writing, yes, it's in writing, there was then a silence while we waited to see who would ask the next question. And in this silence, this little American robot sat-nav voice just suddenly shouted out, you have arrived.
which is so true. Stephen Kenny has arrived at his destination.
Yeah. We were watching it on RT News Now. It was like, well, something extremely juicy has just been said there about, you know, the worthwhileness or otherwise of contracts in the world of football or something.
Yeah,
it was just that was off mic that we couldn't hear.
A sat nav voice making a perfectly timed joke.
That was an important...
God, that's going to appear in quite a few colour pieces.
That was an important clarification. It's in the contract, so...
In writing.
It has to happen.
So there you go, Murph.
That's supposed to shut me up then. Football contract has been signed.
Think it's a bit better than a 91% chance, Murph, to be honest.
Okay, great. How long was that contract that Sadio Mane signed last week? I'm sure he's going to definitely be at Liverpool for the duration of that as well.
Well, you never know. I mean, I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to your question. I've had too much on my plate to keep up with the number of years inside your man's contract. The question, there's a bunch of questions. One of them, I think this is a concern that you've had, Owen, which is to do with, it's not as though Stephen Kenny will simply be cryogenically frozen between and will emerge. You know, he steps into the deep freeze now and he emerges in August 2020 as exactly the same man as he is today. He has to go on a journey to get to that date, as we all do. And who knows what will happen on that journey. The Ireland under 21 job has often been a, you know, treacherous byway. Not to put a too fine point on it, Owen, people have lost a lot of games, you know. And does that situation add extra pressure, I think, was the question that was put to him.
Well, that's an opinion. That's an opinion. But I think the under-21s has never been always about results. As I said, it's been about trying to get players through the under-21s into the senior international team. So I think I'm excited, like, about the under-21 job. I think... It's unusual because And I didn't realise myself, you know, last year, because I've been at some of the games last year, and it was 19, you know, the age group was 1996. But now, for this year, it's players born in 1998, okay, for this year. So there are some players that have been involved in the senior international team in recent times, you know, in training in the squads. Leo Connor, obviously Michael Obafemi, and Kevin Kelleher have been in the squad. So they're all available for the under-21s this year. And, you know, there's been other players who've been really doing well through the groups. It's not fair to mention players, but obviously Adam Oyd and Troy Parrott and people like that have caught the eye. And even at, there's players that in the League of Ireland, you know, available for the under-21 teams that I think, I mean, even right throughout the country, UCD, you know, players like Neil Ferrugia and Liam Scales, Will Fitzgerald down in Limerick, Shamrock Rovers, like Trevor Clark, the left back at Shamrock Rovers, Darragh Leahy at Bohemians, two really good left backs, Ali Regba at Bohemians, like players like that. And I'm leaving a lot out, I would say, but there's a whole, the underlying thing is that there's a lot of young talented players playing throughout the country. Like there's players in the senior international team. John Egan is from Kerry, all right? And Seamus Coleman's from the other end of Donegal. So right throughout the country, the team is represented. There's grassroots teams at all levels throughout the country. And my job is to help get all as many good players as we can from every part of the country into the into the youth international setup and into the under-21s, and then hopefully on into the first team again.
So you can hear Stephen Kenny there said it wouldn't be fair to mention players, then named a lot of players. And the more players he named, the more confident I started to feel. You know, even Kerry is producing players. Although I saw Gavin Casey say, oh, John Egan is not from Kerry. John Egan's father, maybe.
But John, he's of Cork.
John Egan is a Cork man. I don't know how that works exactly. I mean, I thought if your father's a Kerry player, you could probably say, yeah, I'm from Kerry. I mean, what would you... How does that work?
I guess it's an individual choice.
I think he probably supports the Kerry Gaelic footballers.
But he's from Cork. Yeah, it doesn't matter. He's from that area of the country.
Same difference, you mean.
Cork-Kerry area. but, you know, this geographical spread that we've got around the country of talent just breaking through everywhere, you know, like the weeds breaking through the old tarmac of a disused supermarket car park. That's what is going on in Irish football.
I love it. I like this new Happy Ken. I mean, I don't know if I want him to remain this happy for the remainder.
It's just bipolar own. It's just I'm just swinging from one extreme.
Back to normal tomorrow.
There aren't any games. There aren't any Ireland games until March. Yeah. And I honestly, I just feel, okay, let's see how this goes.
No, I just love the fact that Stephen Kenny's just naming names, and because he's naming every one of these names is.
I haven't heard an Irish football man name names like that since the pomp of Brian Kerr. You know, I haven't heard an Irish manager, an Irish football man with so many names on the tip of his tongue, and I like it. Mm-hmm. I like when people list football players. It makes me feel as though we've got a lot of resources out there. Another question that was put to Stephen Kenny was, how much of a step up is this? I don't think being the Ireland under-21 manager is a more difficult job than being the Dundalk manager. But, you know, obviously being the full international manager in a couple of years is a bigger job. So that was sort of put to him. But this was his answer. I thought it was sort of interesting what he got into here.
Obviously, I've had one of the advantages. Obviously, is that I've had 46 Champions League between Champions League and Europa League games. I've had 46 games now at this stage, and so I think European football is probably the best preparation you can get for international football. It's more akin to club domestic leagues. So I think that will serve me well. Sure, I have a lot to learn, and I think Over the next period, the year and a half, you know, over the next 2 years, I have a great opportunity to learn first of all from the current existing or the current international manager Mick McCarthy. You know, I have a lot to learn from him. He's a lot of experience, I think, but it gives me an opportunity to travel and have a look at some of the other international teams, how they prepare, the tactical nuances of the different systems. They're really you look at them, but to actually examine them at close quarters, to go and the detail attached to, because now the blocks of two games in 4 and 5 days, to actually explore the, you know, best practice for preparation in all of that.
Yeah, you know, I think this is good. This is an interesting angle that I hadn't really thought of before, the kind of educational opportunities of what amounts to in large. I mean, obviously he's managing this team and he's going to be overseeing other youth teams, but he does have a lot of time to do other things.
Like watch football.
Yeah, well, it's almost like a kind of sabbatical opportunity that he's got, which is definitely the way that he's looking at it. And I thought that was interesting because I think he can. I think that is quite valuable to a coach, even in coaching mid-career as he is. The chance to sort of step back and kind of update like that is something that not a lot of people get. So looking at it from in a positive way, you know, as opposed to it just being a kind of, well, you just have to sit around now and wait your turn. Actually, there's kind of a good side to this as well. I mean, Stephen Kenny said a lot else today, but he said it in the Daily's newspaper conference, which I can't tell you about, Owen.
Oh, not again. Embargo. Owen, I'm sorry. Ken stamps the word embargo all over the end of this podcast.
I could
stop
tell
hitting
you,
me with that stamp, Ken.
But I don't know which of Daniel McDonald or Evan Malone would be first
on the
to kill you or me if I was to reveal. But I do think that he came across very well. I think he came across as a serious and thoughtful and extremely delighted person.
Is Happy Ken freaking you out as well?
Yeah.
Come on, Owen. I have to be allowed to occasionally just, you know, not moan about everything.
Of course. Okay.
Do you think I've been... do you think...
Of course, one joy a year should be fine. One day a year. You picked a Monday this year. Fair play to you. That means we got two shows worth of this.
Are you wondering if someone has maybe slipped me a bung or something?
No, no.
I haven't been paid to do this. Something I'm doing
more,
this
more chemical though.
No, I'm doing this for free. I'm in my right mind. All I'm saying is, look, this is the story. Deal with it. I'm like, okay, I am actually a natural optimist. It's nonsense. I am a natural optimist and I feel as though, okay, let's hope this works.
I've forgotten the meltdown in question.
Brought on Wilshere at halftime.
No.
Wilshere.
It was the one where he told somebody to get real. What was that one?
Cheer up. How about you fucking wake up? Wake up.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one, yeah. That's the Ken we know and love.
Yeah. No, look, I've spent years now. This Irish football team for years has been a kind of depressing entity. And all really, every time you're talking about it or writing about it, it's just, oh, complain about this, complain about that. Complain. And I just want to, I feel like changing the record. And like, okay, there aren't any games and there isn't any reason. The optimism is baseless. It's just probably delusional. But I'm just going to experience it like this for the next while, if you don't mind. And we'll wait and maybe we'll have a sickening collision with reality in March. Sure. And when that happens, then we'll go back to the old record. But for now, it's good times all the way.
It's Happy Ken. Big thank you to those of you who signed up for the bonus Breaking News podcast last week when O'Neill and Keane left the job. Seems a long time ago now already. Stick around for loads more Irish football coverage in the coming weeks as we find out who we face in the European Championships and as Mick McCarthy goes around re-recruiting Declan Rice and other lapsed Irishmen. And hey, you're going to have Happy Ken for the next few weeks and maybe a few months as well. So enjoy him while he lasts. Secondcaptains.com if you're interested in becoming a member. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Kenny.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
The phone is at me. That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack
for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.